Let's go back in time to 1932 as Converse brings you historic footage of the legendary original Celtics with whom all great professional teams are compared.
We have now taken over your radio.
Richie Guerin is about to show you the most important step in getting past a man. It's the first one.
And Oscar will inbound it. The men in green, the Milwaukee Bucks, that's Al Cinder against Bellamy.
Christian has Jordan. Allen shakes free. Gets two!
Gilmore.
To go in the first quarter for the Cal Palace. Here's Barry.
Jordan. Open. Chicago with the lead.
Hello, and welcome to the Over and Back Classic NBA podcast at thepodiumgame.com. I am Jason Mann, and with me as always is Rich Craich. Rich, great to be with you.
Great to be with you as well. Let's we're in full-fledged playoff mode. I love it.
We are.
It's great.
Yeah, we are back talking about more game sevens. We have chosen the our top seven game sevens in the conference finals, the third round of the NBA playoffs.
The undisputable list, the best game sevens.
There is no argument.
You cannot argue with it.
If you choose something that is different from what we have chosen,
you are wrong.
We will hunt you down. We will shoot you.
Yeah,
we will say mean things to you on Twitter.
Unless you have one that you think we missed, and then you could just send us a thing on, you know, Twitter, and then we'll probably agree.
I don't think we missed any here. I mean,
this is tough. There's not many to choose from, so I think we got.
Yeah, I mean, there's a decent number one to choose from, but yeah, I'm gonna. If we failed our listeners again, I will be a little bit disappointed. But I guess it'll just be an excuse to talk more about basketball and do more research,
exactly,
which we already enjoy doing. So,
right,
yeah. So we're going to go through the honorable mentions before we actually get into the nitty gritty of the list. So we start with the Hawks versus Lakers in 1961, the Hawks winning 105-103. It was the first season for the Lakers in Los Angeles, and Elgin Baylor had 39 points. Bob Pettit had 31. And this was basically kind of a changing of the guard. The St. Louis Hawks had been the main rivals for the Celtics, from the late 50s to the early 60s, winning the title in 58. And now after this season, the Lakers would, basically take that throne and would be the, would face the Celtics in most of the finals for the rest of the 60s. So and failing to win any of them. But noteworthy performance, Elgin Baylor being awesome, even though the Lakers themselves actually were not particularly that great that year. But as we've talked about before, there was some weirdness going on with, teams making the finals with not great records during that time. So.
Right. Yep.
And then our next one is from the next season, the Celtics versus the Philadelphia Warriors. Still, they were just about to move to San Francisco. 109-107. This is the second Wilt Russell playoff series, and Russell would win most of them, as most people listening to this probably know.
Breaking news.
It was one Mr. Clutch, Sam Jones, hit the game winner with 2 seconds left. I wonder when Jerry West took the Mr. Clutch from Sam Jones.
And was it up for a vote, or was it just a kind of? Was there a ceremony? When did it happen? I don't know.
Or was it like everything else that the white guy stole from the black guy?
Right.
My guess. But I'm sure Jerry himself did not take it. I would blame the sports writer.
No, I he probably did.
I mean, it's possible. I don't want to.
let's not doubt.
I don't want to libel. Or I guess we would be slander.
No, I think we can.
I don't want to slander Jerry West. I don't believe the podcasts are immune from slander, Rich. I think we do have to actually be careful.
That's true. You're
right. So. Then we have another Wilt Russell clash in 1968. This was a year after Wilt had actually gotten the better of Russell, and the 76ers had beaten the Celtics and then later won the finals. Sixers were heavy favorites, but in the series, Celtics managed to have the old magic largely behind Sam Jones, John Havlicek, and Larry Siegfried. Wilt actually only had 14 points. Russell only had 12 points. And then for some odd reason, Chamberlain decided to only have one shot in the second half or the fourth quarter. And his explanation is that his coach told him not to shoot. His coach hadn't told him to shoot. And then
okay.
his coach's response was, I never had to tell him to shoot before. So one of those Wilt things. Yeah.
Yeah, that's Wilt. But yeah, I love the comeback. Yeah. That's a great comeback.
I wouldn't think you would have to know.
Like, Wilt was only shot when instructed. Yes. The man who scored 100 points in a game was only shot when told to shoot. I'm sure that's exactly how that went, exactly. Usually.
We have two from 1979. One is the Bullets beating the Spurs in the East. 107 to 105, yes, the Spurs were in the East. George Gervin had 42. The Bullets were led by Bobby Dandridge with 37 and Elvin Hayes with 25. Dandridge hit a pull-up baseline jumper with 8 seconds left to put the Bullets up, and then Elvin Hayes ended up blocking James Silas's drive to seal the game. So I know that the Doug Moe, the coach of the Spurs, was not happy with the referees, saying that they had robbed them of the game. And the same year, the Sonics and Suns, 114 to 110, the Sonics won. And of course, these two teams ended up going into the Sonics and the Bullets went to the finals against each other. A rematch from 78, in which the Sonics won this time. And a Jack Sikma in this game, only his second season, scored a then career high 33 points to lead his team to glory. So next we have the Celtics against the Pistons, 117 to 114, the Celtics winning. This is the series, game five, in which the famous now there's a steal by Bird, steal that the Celtics ended up stealing that game from the Pistons and eventually the winning the series. And Bird actually in this game played all 48 minutes and had 37 points, 9 rebounds, and 9 assists. He was involved in every Celtics basket in the last 6 minutes except for one.
That's, I mean, hey, it's not a bad idea.
That's pretty good.
Not a bad plan. How old is he at this point? Because I mean,
I think he's 29, maybe.
Oh, he's still okay. All right, he hadn't reached his 30s yet.
Yeah, I mean, he's 28 to 30 range. I don't remember.
Okay,
he started off a little bit late in his career, so yeah, he was I guess 31 actually. So,
okay, well, I mean, still not bad for that. Yeah, I mean, you know, you sort of,
around there.
Yeah, I mean, but still just be that straight up, you know, killer at that age is pretty great.
Yeah,
it's pretty fun.
Yeah. I mean, and the injuries were starting to kind of take their toll on him already. But he was obviously still pretty fantastic. And next we have, I guess worth mentioning, the Pistons played the final 12 minutes without Adrian Dantley, who suffered a concussion in the third quarter. I believe he and Vinnie Johnson bumped heads. So I think the interesting thing here is that, like, the margins here were very close. Like, the Pistons were extremely close, even after, you know, losing the game five, were extremely close to, you know, going to the finals in this season. It'd be interesting to think, you know, what one more finals appearance or what one more championship would have done for, you know, how they're remembered.
Right. Absolutely.
Then 1994, the Knicks beating the Pacers 94-90. Patrick Ewing had 24 points, 22 rebounds, 7 assists, and 5 blocks. John Starks had a tough contested drive with about 30 seconds left, and then Ewing was able to get it off the rim and throw it down. And then the Pacers were unable to get a good shot for Reggie Miller at the end of the game, and the Knicks were able to take it. Of course, as we mentioned earlier, the Pacers would have the last laugh the next season.
Yep.
I guess it wasn't the last laugh, but it was the laugh of the
laugh. Yeah, it was a laugh at the hands of the Knicks.
Yes, there you go. And then in 96, the Sonics and Jazz, the Sonics winning 90-86. The Sean Kemp outplaying Karl Malone with 26 points, 14 rebounds. Malone 22-5 with an 18 of 22 shooting.
That was a thing for a while. Sean Kemp outplaying NBA legends.
I mean, Sean Kemp was really great for a while. And then
you kind of forget when he
gained 50 pounds. And that.
Yeah. Well, what could have been?
Yeah.
Because it comes up a lot. We talk a lot about all these really in the
career, but
no, absolutely. But man, you look at this guy of just like a guy that's just. I mean, and this isn't the first time that we've mentioned that. You know, we're mentioning a big playoff series with Sean Kemp being the best player on a team that's competing or whatever. Yeah. And it's crazy just to think of his trajectory and just what happened to it.
So.
Right. So you think, oh God, I mean, this guy's got another 8 to 10 years of being really good. Sure. No, not really.
And then our final choice is the Pistons beating the Heat 88-82 in 2005. The Heat led by six with less than 7 minutes to go, but the Pistons went on an 8-0 run. Ben Wallace dunking over Rasual Butler. Rasual Butler was in the league at that point.
you have to really look at the career of Russell and really give it up for him, for that guy to stay in as long as he stayed.
Who would have thought that Rasual Butler would outlast Ben Wallace?
He's outlasted a lot.
They got to be fairly close to the same age. Rasual's probably a couple years younger, but not that far, you know?
Yeah, what is he's 35 now?
Maybe Ben Wallace is like 5 years older. Never mind.
35, yeah, he's 35 okay, right
ben
now.
Ben Wallace is 40, so, all right.
Okay, well, all right, so a little so bit, but man, he came in, Rasual Butler came in the league in 2002.
Okay, right, so. Dwayne Wade went scoreless in the fourth quarter, missing all six of his shots and committing two turnovers. So
he is not clutch in my mind.
Definitely not. Yeah.
And until I see otherwise, he is not clutch. Yeah. So.
Maybe look at what happened the next season. Maybe that'll.
Right. No. I go by small sample sizes to determine if people are clutch
fair.
Or not.
That's fair. So. So those are our honorable mentions. I think they're pretty good.
Some
good series. Are there any of those that you think like you might like be borderline for our list, or do you think our list is?
I think the one that I think a lot of people are going to bring up is that Celtics Pistons 87 because it's kind of the glory years of the both teams, and it's obviously such a close game, and there's so much stuff that kind of happens in that I could see that one, but I don't know if it is necessarily as iconic as some of the ones we're talking about. It's got iconic teams, but when you really look at the list that we have, I think you're going to say, you know what, these guys are probably right, but. That would probably be the only one that I would say for sure. And then maybe, you know, you could talk about the one of the, you know, the Wilt Russell ones. But I think we did a great job with these guys.
Well, yeah, thanks. I think we did a good job, too. I would agree. I think the Celtics Pistons series, one, I think it's overshadowed by the Bird play in game five. And also, you know, there's a lot of other Pistons and Celtics iconic stuff that's kind of bigger than what happens in this game. That's better remembered for whatever reason. And we kind of go through it in some of the other, game seven shows. So yes, I think you're right, but I think our seven choices, I think our listeners will be pleased by what we ended up going with.
Absolutely.
So, our seventh favorite game seven from the conference finals is the Lakers taking on the Sacramento Kings in 2002, 112-106 in overtime. I guess this was the only overtime in conference finals history. I'm not sure if that's still the case. Overtime game seven. I'm sorry. Yes. Right.
Because someone's going to go, oh, you idiots. Like, of course there's other ones.
Right.
No, overtime game seven. So that seems, it seems bizarre. That's tough to believe. But like, again, like we're kind of finding out with the series is there's not many game sevens. Like we really, especially when we get to the finals of this, that was hard to come up with, you know, more than, you know, we had seven for sure, but it was like, man, we really kind of only have about 10, or 12 to choose from, so it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, ones that are close and interesting and all that. But yes, that's certainly the case. You know, each of the last four games came down to the final five seconds of regulation. There's kind of a famous referee controversy in Game Six. A lot of shenanigans during the time. I mean, this is definitely a fierce rivalry, just incredible. Shaq puts up 35-13. I guess this was the first road game seven win in Lakers history, which is pretty impressive think about. And I guess, a lot of them were against the Celtics and all those they lost. So Kobe also was, he had 30-10. He did cool off in the fourth quarter in overtime, but, still productive. The Kings were just brutal in this game. I mean, they really just, other than Mike Bibby, they pretty much all went cold.
Yeah, and they had so many opportunities to win this too, and this is one that you look at, and you know it's famous for a lot of different reasons or whatever. But one of the Kings, there was no reason they should have lost this game. Like when you really look at even if they did just slightly better at some like the fundamental things, like, I don't know, making free throws, or like having like Peja hitting, you know, two more shots than he did, or even one more shot than he did. Like, you look at how, you know, how close this was with all that happening, and you realize, man, this was for them for the taking, and they just couldn't do it. They couldn't get it done. I mean, of every game that could have just changed a franchise around, this is one of them, and it didn't happen. And there's a lot of reasons, you know, people have brought up, you know, conspiracy theories and all this sort of stuff. They had opportunities. They just didn't capitalize on any of them. So if this game was rigged, they did a really terrible job of doing it, because the Kings were very, very close to still winning. So it's always funny that this one comes up, because it's like, well, I mean, Jesus, like, for trying to rig it, they sure did give the Kings a lot of chances to win this game that they just did not take. So, yeah, as you mentioned, Peja Stojakovic, 3 of 12 shooting. Doug Christie did nothing. Peja, 0 of 6 from 3. I mean, come on. That's,
yeah. And
that's probably didn't happen very often, and that kind of sucks to happen in this situation.
And he has a wide-open 3, you know, in the final seconds, which would have given them the lead, and just, you know, just completely, you know, overshoots the backboard. You know, doesn't even give a chance to get a rebound or anything, or overshots the rim, hits the other side of the backboard, and just, and Chris Webber just has a really bad turnover. Actually, Shaq had a couple of bad kind of clutch plays, but didn't end up really hurting them at the end. And the Kings, you know, only they missed 14 out of 30 free throws. They shot 2 for 20 from 3-point range. I mean, just disappointing considering, like, I mean, that was a really, like, I kind of feel like that was sort of a similar team to those early 70s Bulls that we talked about in terms of, like, you know, just barely like being memorable and being interesting and just barely not being able to reach, you know, past the, you know, the conference finals. I mean, you know, they had some tough competition during that time. They obviously had a fierce rivalry with the Lakers that, you know, actually got Sacramento some national attention for a while. I mean, they really were an interesting team, but ultimately, you know, it ended up being short-lived for, you know, various reasons.
Yeah, and your favorite guy in the world, Mike Bibby, had a great game.
Yeah.
I'm sure you love that, and you're a big fan, and that's when you started wearing your Mike Bibby jersey, huh?
Absolutely.
Is that when you bought it? It was after this?
Absolutely. 29 points on 25, 25 shots, minus 13, plus minus. No, not that we, you know, buy individual plus minus too much, but for the record, I don't actually hate Mike Bibby. I know a lot of people hate Mike Bibby. I'm actually, like, he got the Hawks to a playoff series in 2008. So
exactly.
So I'm willing to overlook a lot for that. So
no, but this is just a great game, and one that if you get a chance to go look out, and really, yeah, it's like a iconic, historic Game 7, and it's pretty telling that this is 7th on our list here. So that'll tell you just about how good these are going to be.
Right. And then number 7 is the Golden State Warriors beating the Chicago Bulls 83-79. Speaking of the Bulls teams we were just talking about, and you know, we talked about this Warriors team a bit during our Rick Barry podcast, and they also Barry was 31 at the time, and he didn't win MVP, but put together an MVP caliber season, just really carrying the Warriors, who were very young, into the playoffs. Also Jamal Wilkes, who was a rookie, playing supremely well, and just doing well. And the Bulls, I mean, they just had like so much balance.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's one of the best things about the 70s era Bulls, and we talked about that in our previous episode where we kind of did the ones that we missed or whatever of the early rounds. And yeah, we talked about that Bulls team, and especially in this, you get it from this game, and it's kind of a microcosm of it, is, you know, they get contributions from all of their top five guys. You know, Chet Walker adds 21, Bob Love puts in 17, Jerry Sloan puts 14, Norm Van Leer 14, and Tom Boerwinkel 10. And like, that's, you know, that's pretty good if you can get, you know, your starting five all in double digits. And that seemed to be kind of a trend with those teams, and that's something that's kind of made them so good, but maybe was a reason why they never could quite get to that next level. And this game was kind of interesting as well, when, you know, the game's on the line, they don't really know who's supposed to have the ball and who's supposed to shoot and who their top guy is, and sort of you get that sometimes. Like, yeah, the really awesome balanced teams are fun to watch, and they have great seasons sometimes, but then, you know, a lot of times it takes that one guy being the star that kind of puts you over the hump, and they didn't necessarily have that, but still, this is a great team. And they interestingly enough, it's kind of, you know, you probably wouldn't think it, but the Bulls were kind of the favorites going into this series, and a lot of people assumed that this was kind of their year to either make a run to the NBA Finals or win a championship, and it wasn't to be, in the Warriors upset them, and then went on to do good old Rick Barry things, and
yeah,
as we mentioned in our first episode ever, win the NBA title. And in Rick Barry's, what is that, 11th or 12th year, I think?
Not
in the league. I don't have the exact number. Then you got to add the ABA.
His first year was 66, I think. So ninth, 10th year. This was actually Chet Walker's final game, which I didn't realize.
I didn't know that. No, I did not know
that.
He
was actually still really good in his last
season. Why'd you leave, Chet? Come on, maybe we could have won some games.
I don't know. There's an SI article on the Bulls from around that time about kind of how much they started hating each other and how much they, had kind of gotten along for a while and then they just kind of like got sick of each other type of thing, which is interesting. So I'm sure that probably had something to do with it. Chet Walker's kind of a sort of a forgotten great, but he is he's top 100 both in, or I believe he's top 100 both in total win shares and in win shares per 48, which is probably stronger than most people would view him in his career. But he's definitely had a very strong career. Of course, was also important for the Philly teams, including the 67 championship team.
Right.
And
he won a Tony Award, apparently. This cannot be the same Chet Walker, is it? It's not.
I would guess it's probably not. Yes, I would guess probably
not. I just
did
a Google search, and Chet Walker, director and choreographer, a Tony Award winning. It's a white guy.
Okay.
But
yes. Well, there you go.
So white. I can safely, unless he's gotten a lot of surgery.
White guy named Chet. That's.
That, yeah, he's an interesting dude, but he has a core. Yeah, there you go. That's so not the same Chet Walker, in case you were curious. Our Chet Walker has not won a Tony Award.
Not that we know of.
That would be awesome if he did, but I feel like we'd heard more about that, or we would have done a show about that already,
probably. Although I have to admit that the Tony Awards are a bit of a blind
spot. I stay up. Yeah. I have Tony Award parties and pick them.
Sure.
And,
that makes sense.
It's a big thing for me.
I can see that.
A very cultured man as myself.
Yeah. So. Man who loves the theater. So the next series is the Boston Celtics and Philadelphia 76ers from 1965, and it is most famous for the Johnny Most call of Havlicek stole the ball. Basically, the situation.
Never heard of it.
The situation is the Celtics have a 1-point lead. The 76ers were inbounding the ball with 5 seconds left. This was actually after Bill Russell had an inbound pass, but it hit one of the wires supporting the basket. So it was a turnover. Hal Greer was inbounding, tried to get it to Wilt, but Russell was covering him. So he went to Chet Walker, who, of course, we just mentioned. And Havlicek knocked the pass away. It went to Sam Jones across the court. He dribbles it out. And then he sends it back to Havlicek in the corner. And then basically the crowd mobs him at that point. You've probably seen the clip. It's one of the most famous clips in NBA history. But, I mean, it was a terrific game and a terrific series. Red Auerbach actually, with just a few minutes left, Boston was up 7. He lit the traditional victory cigar, which is basically like his symbol. He thought the game was over. And then actually... the Sixers stormed back to make it a 1-point game, ended up, winning the game despite the victory cigar, which I guess famously no one ever came back after Red, lit the victory cigar. So,
there's never been nobody can.
My understanding is no one has that never happened.
Okay.
Maybe it's possible, but as far as I can recall from what I've read, that has not happened. So, but Wilt had 30 points in the game. Chet Walker had 24. Sam Jones had 37. Havlicek at 26. Good game. We don't have rebound totals in the box score of this game. So,
stupid old box scores.
Yeah.
Why do they think they're terrible. Okay. The old box scores are awful.
Yeah. So, okay. Here's a weird thing. What I don't understand is why they have free throws and free throws attempted in a box score, in a basic box score stat, but they don't have field goals attempted. They just have.
Right. I agree. It's the weirdest thing. I never know how efficient these guys are.
That is so strange. That must be why people constantly harp on free throws. Not that they're not important, but I just feel like there's this mentality that maybe sort of outweighs the importance of free throws. a little bit, you know. So maybe that's like part of it. Like it was part of the basic box score, so like it got ingrained in like basketball brains of how important.
Right, you would look at a box score and see the guy was, you know, 2 of 14 from the free throw line.
So it's just one of those like tradition things, but. I don't know.
They're so bad. Yeah, you see them on Basketball Reference, you're like, ooh, like, oh, like the worst thing to do on Basketball Reference is like scroll down at a game, an individual game, and just see like a bunch of blank spots. And you got points, and you got free throws attempted. And you're like, God damn it. Yeah. Like this does nothing for me. I know nothing about this game. So, yeah.
So,
but yeah. It's all right.
No problem.
Basketball Reference, you do a good job at.
Yeah, we love you, Basketball Reference. It's not your fault that, you know, some of the data is not it's not your fault that, you know, basketball
you do an okay
was
job
a pretty obscure sport until, you know, until the early 80s, and so no one bothered, you know, covering aspects of it. Moving on, our next...
But now that's what we do. So, you know, we have that.
Yeah,
so.
Right. You know.
Except we don't have all the data. We have no idea what happened in the game, really, but that's fine.
Yeah.
There's also not video of any of this stuff.
Yeah, there's video of this, but... I don't know if there's much that much video other than... I mean, there's obviously the famous thing. I forgot. I don't know if I checked to see if there's extensive video
the whole
of game.
Yeah.
I mean, I doubt there's the whole game. There's probably sequences of it, but... Anyway, I'm sure somebody will let us know, or we'll probably check YouTube afterward and find out. So, anyway, our next choice is the Baltimore Bullets taking on the New York Knicks in 1971. This is a year after the Knicks had won their first NBA title, and the Bullets and Knicks played in the playoffs six straight seasons from 69 to 74. So, they've sort of very much had different styles. The Bullets had Earl Monroe, Kevin Lowry, and Gus Johnson, who were sort of explosive and crowd-pleasing and high-flying. Not really much defensively, other than maybe, you know, Wes Unseld. The Knicks were sort of more, you know, defensive and, you know, just known as a passing team and not so much the flashy play anyway. I mean, they had characters, obviously. They had Walt Frazier and Will Street wasn't really a character, but he was, you know, just kind of the enforcer. And they, you know, they had straight-laced Bill Bradley, and they had tough guy DeBuscher. You know, I know how much you love when I talk about the Knicks.
Oh yes, yeah, keep going on. I love it. So what a iconic team.
Well, you'll be excited to know that this is actually a series the Bullets won. Where they dethroned the champs. Wes Unseld.
Oh, I thought the Knicks won like four straight titles.
You would think.
They only won one?
Well, they won two, but
or two, yeah, right. Yeah. You know. I thought they won five straight. I thought they dominated the team of the 70s,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. So,
you jerk.
Wes Unseld blocked Bill Bradley's game tying jumper attempt in the final seconds, and the Bullets dethroned the champs. Fred Carter earlier, with just over a minute remaining, hit the decisive jump shot. And Kevin Lowry kind of made a good point in a quote afterward. He said, talking about how like Baltimore was always losing to New York, that they couldn't beat the Knicks and the Colts couldn't beat the Jets and the Orioles couldn't beat the Mets. So finally, when they beat the Knicks, that was their championship, and they did not do well in the finals against the Bucks. So they were swept in the against the Bucks. So I guess in a sense it was their championship. I guess it's a nice offensive way to look at it.
I mean, because then you got Kareem, and that's no fun. That's not fair.
No, Kareem was pretty good at that point.
Yeah, 1971, you know, Lou Alcindor, Kareem. Being able to play
He was good for a long time after that too, but he was particularly good at that point.
Yeah, this was just like on like next level, like great stuff for at least in my mind. I mean, this was, I think, just his unbelievable year. But yeah. Good try anyway.
Yep. So,
you got to the finals. That counts. You know, hey, you get to the finals, you're good. That's what I always say.
They made out a list of game seven, so that's a pretty good accomplishment right there. And so the next series is the Bulls and the Pacers. Guess who won this one, Rich?
1998. This was Jordan had retired, so it was the Cornell David Hersey Hawkins Bowl
in a game seven against the Pacers.
Right, in the conference finals. I believe the Pacers. Am I correct? Or oh, I'm a year off. Never mind. It's still Jordan, still here. Never mind. Yes, okay,
there you go.
Jordan, I believe Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls won. So
I think you might be right. So Reggie Miller.
It's not a very good game. It's ugly as hell. This game is there's a lot of YouTube videos of this game, and it's a really really disgusting game. This Pacers team, man, especially Reggie has a great game. You know, he has 22 points. He's 4-7 from three. The rest of the Pacers, they didn't really show up at all. Rick Smith had a good game. He had 13 points. Not much else for him. Dale Davis had 9 points, 9 rebounds. This game is particularly interesting if you follow our Twitter account, because a few days ago I tweeted out a screenshot from this, and the Pacers had decided, hey, let's all shave our heads, which for some of the guys, including like a Dale Davis or Reggie Miller, not a big deal. Chris Mullin and Rick Smith are horrifying as bald men. Tall, like pale, bald white man is just a very weird look.
It's not
good. Especially a Rick Smith kind of.
That was the one that was a little bit questionable. You know?
Like Mullen, yeah. I mean, it was almost an upgrade over the crew cut. I won't say that much, but Rick Smith was a horrifying downgrade from the golden locks of his youth.
I mean, so. He really did have some golden locks. I mean, they were
great hair. Like,
yeah.
Like, I would have said, like, no, guys, you all shave your head, but I'm not getting rid of you. Like, come on, that was a lot of work for him to get that and then to I mean, come on.
I mean, Rick Smith's might be top 50 all-time hairstyles, you know, in NBA.
Yeah, why haven't we done a podcast on that?
I mean, we just haven't gotten
to it yet. Why don't we stop this? What are we doing right now? This is dumb. But, it's a very interesting game for that respect. The Bulls are, you know this Bulls team. This is 98 Bulls team.
I know them.
Rodman has an okay game, not really good by his standards. Only 6 rebounds, which is for Rodman in a playoff game is like a you know super super low. I mean, this is a guy who always showed up, you know, rebound wise in big games. Pippen had a good game, 17 points. Jordan, of course, had a solid game, you know, as he's wanting to do, 28 points, 9 rebounds. But he shot a lot from the floor, 9 of 25, so he struggled a little bit.
It's Kobe-esque.
Tony Kukoc, though, was really good. And he was kind of a star. You know, a lot of people forget, you know, how good of a contribution he was in these late Bulls years. Like, I don't really know if they win as many titles or any of these titles, really, without him, you know, being a solid hand there. You know, here he has 21 points, 7-11 shooting, 3-4 from three. Just a well-balanced team this Bulls team was, and people sort of remember Jordan being the guy. And he obviously is, but these teams were a lot of ways built on, you know, Pippen being still really good, and then Tony Kukoc, as I mentioned, being a big part of that as well. And even after the game, Jordan mentions in a quote, you know, they're doing an interview, and you can find that in the YouTube video, where he says, you know, everybody kind of focuses on giving the ball to me, and everybody focuses on me, but he said, you know, this year, this team, this is a total team that we have, and they haven't had that a lot, where you know, usually you kind of have Jordan as the security blanket, but this team needed other guys, and Kukoc was one of those guys. So one of the big points of this game, though, the margin, the second chance points margin. The Bulls had 26-1 second chance points for the Pacers. Offensive rebound percentage, the Bulls had 42.3, and the Pacers had 12.5. And that was bared out in a lot of the quotes as well. This is Larry Bird's first year coaching the Indiana Pacers, and he says, we definitely got the effort, but we got beat to a lot of loose balls, and it seems like the little things beat us. We're not a great rebounding team on the offensive boards, and we were overmatched. It seemed like they were quicker to the ball. They got a couple offensive rebounds that ripped our hearts out. So, and this is a pretty telling game. I mean, obviously, the ramifications of this game, I mean, that they speak for themselves. The Bulls were you know, a dynasty that was just about over, and everybody kind of knew it. And again, you know, the narrative is that, you know, Jerry Krause blew this team up, and the Bulls manager blew this team up. If you read the article immediately following the game, as it says, the Bulls on their last stand, like, everybody knew this was it. This was over. Team was done. Everybody was going away after this. So, but the Pacers, in a lot of ways, kind of reinvented themselves as well. And, you know, it was only a few years later then they'd be in the NBA Finals with, you know, a dramatically different team with different guys sort of being, you know, the charges and being the leads of it. So it's kind of interesting to see. But, you know, this is still the core Pacers team that we kind of remember. But it'd be a few years and they kind of reinvent themselves a few times. But just kind of a really ugly game, but a nice close one, and one that's definitely, you know, warrants mention on this list.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably the closest that the you know, the Jordan Bulls, once they became a championship team with Jordan, that came to, yeah, you know, losing in any of those stretch of 6 championships. I mean, this is like sort of the latest in a series they were forced to a game seven, sort of the tightest margin they had. I mean, I know they went to game seven against the Knicks, and, you know, there were some other times that were tight, but I think this might be like the closest they came to, you know,
sure,
to failing during that stretch.
I mean, they were a minute away, really, or, you know, almost 2 minutes away from just losing and then, you know, only winning five titles and not going. I mean, there's sure. a lot of stuff in there.
Yeah, that, I mean, that would make a difference in how we think of them. I mean, absolutely. You know, they would still obviously be amazing, but it would definitely, you know,
especially the Jordan, you know, because obviously what happened is, you know, he leaves the NBA with that shot, with the shot right. over, you know, Byron Russell or whatever. Yeah. And you wouldn't get that. I mean, that you straight up would not get that. His last memory would be, you know, shaking Reggie Miller's hand. And like that, it's just unfathomable to think of that.
Who wants
you know,
to see that?
We know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And everyone's bald. Like all the Pacers are bald. Like that's the team that represents you. Yeah. Like, come on. They're all weirdos. Like yeah. I'm honestly saying, go look up this video. There's like a huddle that they take. And first off, Larry Bird, where's your commitment to the team? Has a full head of hair.
Yeah.
That's cool, dude. But you just see it. Like everybody gets in the huddle. And they're all like freshly shaved in heads. And it's just like, oh, what are you guys doing? Like, it's kind of creepy. It's very Indiana Pacers in a lot of ways. So,
yeah. yeah. I wonder who would have won a Pacers Jazz finals.
I don't know. Oh, God. Would we have wanted to see that? Can you imagine that series?
Well, I mean, I don't know. It would be interesting. I mean, I guess it would be interesting to see who would have won because it would have been a player who never won a championship otherwise.
Yeah, you know, there would be. Yeah, I think that would be the one. I mean, the games would be ugly as sin, but yeah, well, there'd be a cool value, at least for me, in that respect, because I always loved that idea of guys that, even though it's stupid, even though I think the ring argument is really dumb, I like seeing guys win their one ring so people stop mentioning it ever again.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think the ring, like, I do think there, I'm sure we'll get into this more in later podcasts, but I do think there is something to like being the best player on a team that wins a ring. I mean, I know there's a lot of circumstances, but I do think like winning, you know, being the best player or being a large contributor to a championship team or multiple championship teams, I think that does give you an edge sure. over players who haven't, but that's obviously not the end all be all.
Mm-hmm. But this would have been, yeah, like you mentioned, that would have been a particularly good one because then, you know, you kind of get rid of it for Karl Malone or you get rid of it for Reggie Miller. And, yeah. and I think it haunts Malone a little bit more than it haunts Reggie Miller. But it's pretty.
I mean, Reggie was a really good player, but like Karl Malone's an all time. Like he's one of the three best power forwards of all time. And like it's just weird that he never won a championship.
You know? Yeah. And it's obviously, you know, it obviously disturbed Malone a little bit because, you know, we see the later years where he went to the Lakers and was like, you know, that was his goal again and got close again and lost. So it was something that definitely defined his career, you know, in the later half and really, whereas Reggie, I don't know if anybody really defines his career he didn't win a ring.
I don't think he was like quite good enough to,
I think he overperformed what he really, I mean, or not, or at least performed about what he should have done. You know, the Pacers were about as successful as I kind of think that they should have been.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I mean, he's like a top 10 shooting guard of all time, but he's not.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Whereas Malone is, you know, arguably, and I don't think so anymore, but arguably, you know, the best power forward ever.
Other than
you know.
Duncan, yeah, he's probably next on the list, or at least, you know, in off the top of my head anyway. So, so the our runner up, although I deferred to you on this order, but I would put this as the first, but it's the Boston Celtics against the Philadelphia 76ers in the 1981 Eastern Conference Finals, the Celtics winning 91-90. This is part of, you know, a huge Celtics 76ers rivalry in the early 80s. I mean, they met in the playoffs 3 or 4 years in a row, you know, deep series. This was a 3-1 rally comeback by the Celtics. They would next season they would come close to replicating that, although the Sixers would finally stave them off. I mean, you're talking about the you know, the Dr. J Sixers. You're talking about Bird in his second season, Parrish and McHale on the Celtics for their first season. The Celtics also have Cedric Maxwell, Tiny Archibald. The 76ers have Daryl Dawkins, Bobby Jones, Maurice Cheeks, Andrew Toney early in his career. So
Lionel Hollins, head coach, future head
coach. That's right. Yeah, Lionel Hollins was there too.
A lot of head coaches in this. If you look at this, you got Lionel Hollins, Larry Bird, ML Carr.
Yeah.
Chris Ford. Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah, completely, you know, Kevin McHale.
Yeah.
Anyone we're missing here? Oh, Mo Cheeks.
Oh, yeah. Mo Cheeks. Yes. Jeez. Yeah. ML Carr was a coach. I thought he was just
he was the coach. Unfortunately, he got a weird. Yeah, I think we might have talked about him. He had like a weird stint as the The coach, the Celtics, right?
Oh, that's right. Okay,
he was their executive.
I just didn't remember that he was.
Yeah, and then too. I think it was one of those like we talked about, kind of the oddities where, you know, he went from exec to coach and then to just nothing. Because like, oh wait, you're not good at any of those. So
there you go.
Go away.
But he was good. He was good at waving the towel, though.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah,
he was an excellent towel waver. That's right. Yeah, he coached him for 2 years. So there you go. Yes. So. You know, I mean, obviously, I mean, this is, you know, longtime Boston-Philly rivalry. Five of the seven games were decided by 2 points or fewer, including each of the last four. Just a really rough and tumble physical game. Just one field goal in the last 3 minutes. Larry Bird has the famous go-ahead bank shot in the final minute. Maurice Cheeks has a chance to tie the game at the line, but misses one of two. And then the final play is Bobby Jones just slightly overthrowing Julius Erving in the inbound, and the Sixers don't have a chance to win, and the Celtics rally and win. So just a really... you know, kind of an epitome of just a really, you know, tough physical rivalry. Irving has 23 points. Bird also has 23 points. Maxwell had 19. Jared Dawkins at 16. So not like necessarily a – obviously it was a pretty low scoring game, so not necessarily like any outstanding individual performances,
right,
you know, scoring-wise, but – just, you know, great players. You know, Bird, you know, in his youth, you know, taking over the league, or taking over half the league, where Magic's taking the other half of the league, you know, so to speak. And but, you know, Irving was still there and was still great, and was, you know, and they people I think kind of forget that the first 4 years of Bird's career, you know, Irving went to the finals 3 of those 4 years. So
right,
you know, good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, you mentioned the early Bird. We mentioned a McHale as well. And, you know, he was still just,
yeah, he was a rookie this
year. A little baby. Yeah. Or he was still a rookie as well. Yeah. 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 Okay. So it'd be a while till he would kind of come into form. And I really kind of think when you look at, and it's probably not, you know, completely, you know, a hot take or whatever, but a lot of the Celtics success was him turning into just a really good player. And it took, you know, 3 or 4 years for him to really, you know, get to an all-star level. Once he did, a lot of ways they were off and running, and, you know, it's pretty telling when you see that as well. And you know, Parrish as well was another guy who sort of had to step his game up and become that guy for them to really do it. But yeah, it's kind of, we forget, like you said, that Dr. J, you know, kind of was the toast of that conference for a few years until Bird and the Celtics really took it over. But yeah, it was one of his opportunities to kind of get there. But interesting game. And yeah, like you said, maybe not the you know, the best game is like a beautiful game, but just a nice rough and tumble.
I think the intensity is so incredible.
Sure.
This game. I mean, it's one of the most intense games I've seen. I mean, it really does have like that. So it's beautiful in that sense, but yeah, it doesn't quite have the same. I mean, it has good passing. It has good ball movement. I mean, there are exciting things, but it's ugly in a different way than like some like the mid 90s Knicks type games are.
Yeah. Absolutely. Exactly. Yeah. Them missing shots wasn't just because they had nobody that could score. It was because, you know, it wasn't like the, oh God, like who the hell do we, like, okay, Derek Harper, you take a shot. Yeah. Like it wasn't that. I mean, we ran down these guys here. These are, you know, really, really great scorers up and down the, it was such an intense game, and everybody was just playing to the full, you know, abilities and full intensity. So that was more, you know, what I meant in terms of not, you know. But yeah, it was absolutely a great game and an easy choice. I mean, I didn't pick it as my number one, but an easy choice for the top seven and no doubt an easy choice for the top three. And even, you know, I wouldn't argue with you putting it as number one at all.
Well, good.
Except I'm going to argue because I chose number one is the Lakers and the Blazers from 2000, 89-84. And this, I mean, come on, you know this game. We've talked about it during our Scottie Pippen podcast. We've talked about it numerous podcasts. It's the one, you know, the iconic, you know, Shaq, you know, Shaq Kobe alley-oop combo at the end, you know, the epic collapse by the Blazers, you know, the Blazers coming so close and losing, and just kind of just a total, you know, we talk about the transformations of franchises. I mean, this one in particular is just so glaring because it would sort of be the jail Blazers after this, and they would fall apart, and it would be, you know, many, many, many years until they would even get anywhere close to this level, and you could argue they still haven't gotten anywhere near close to this level, and they really haven't. Whereas the Lakers, you know, went on to have, you know, numerous titles, and and the Kobe Shaq and all that sort of stuff. But this game in particular is just incredible. LA takes a 3-1 series lead, then drops two games in a row to Portland. So this set up a winner-take-all game seven. And this is a one where the crowd is just insane this game. It's just an unbelievable crowd. The Lakers mount a great comeback in this game. Just so much good stuff in this game. I mean, where did you have this on your list? I forgot where you ranked it, but this is my easy number.
It would probably be number two. So it's not. So we're not far off on this for sure.
Right. But when we talk about storylines and stuff and how important those are weaving into like a good game, I mean, this is a game that I think of. Just so much stuff is in this game and so many different, you know, careers and guys in this and people that are stars and fading stars and just different team dynamics too with that Portland team. You look at that roster and it's just like a video game roster of so many good guys, but it just doesn't quite, you know, work and it doesn't quite, you know, beat the Lakers. And, you know, the Lakers have to come back from a huge deficit. You know, Shaq is just, it's unbelievable. But, the interesting part, you know, Shaq doesn't have, you know, a great first part of the game, but then explodes in the fourth quarter, has 9 points. Kobe has a great game, 25 points, 11 rebounds, 7 assists, and 4 blocks, which is good enough.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, you know, the rim-rattling, you know, alley-oop is just the iconic. I mean, it's just something you still see to this day in every video package is, you know, Shaq throwing down that alley-oop and just pointing to Kobe. And it was just iconic in so many different ways.
Right. And at that point, they were up by 6 with 40 seconds left, you know, and essentially winning that, essentially stealing the game there. And yeah, I mean, Portland led by 15 with 10 minutes left in the game. They missed 13 consecutive shots, including 6 by Rasheed Wallace. They're 15 for 23 in the final in the fourth quarter. And yeah, that's just that's just pretty amazing. Yeah, the Lakers outscored the Blazers 31-13. So I think. The thing for me is that, it sets up the Lakers story for, you know, the next, you know, 3 or 4 years. It's just like, basically, you know, LA has an almost insurmountable lead and then just, you know, is about as low as it possibly can get and then rallies back and, you know, and holds on and then, you know, kind of smooth sailing from there. I mean, it is just the dramatic arc, I guess, that from that is kind of what puts that for me in sort of the top tier. Would you kind of, you know,
split
it apart from the Lakers Kings, which is also, you know, has a lot of dramatics and has a lot of interesting things and has some similarities. But I just think that the kind of the point in the Shaq Kobe Lakers that they're in, I think, you know, spices it up a little bit for me, for lack of a better.
Sure. And that the epic collapse as well. Whereas, yeah, you know, the Kings, it wasn't necessarily that. I mean, there was stuff that, you know, obviously the Kings, like I mentioned, you know, probably should have won that game for a lot of reasons.
They were the better team for sure.
The Blazers, I mean, should have won. I mean, up 15 with 10 to go is like, you're good.
It's pretty close to about as, you know, it's pretty close to a safe lead at that point.
Exactly. Yeah. Like the Kings hypothetically should have won this game, but the Blazers, like, literally, no reason they should have lost this game.
Right.
And it took an epic collapse and an epic, you know, Lakers comeback or whatever to do that. And it was just, it's such a big game and such a fun game, too. I mean, that Blazers team is just a fascinating, fascinating team of just that roster and the construction of that roster. And the fact that, you know, hey, they were able to get that close with that, you know, construction of the roster. And it just didn't work. And it's just weird how, you know, we talk about, you know, 15 minutes, 10 minutes, just completely changing around a franchise. And it absolutely, Portland has just fallen on a lot of hard times. And you know, they're still a good franchise, and I wouldn't call them a, you know, model franchise or whatever right now. But just it's so many issues that happen from that and having to rebuild multiple times with multiple different stars or whatever. And they just still haven't found the right mix to get to where they were with this, you know, this bunch. But just a great roster and a great team. And the Lakers are a fun team too. Like you mentioned, this is sort of the early budding of their, you know, dynasty. So it's a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Yeah. Good times. Anything else to say about game sevens in the conference finals?
No, I don't know. I'm sure there's going to be one or two that people say that we missed. I feel like we did a great job with this, though. But of course, if we do, please let us know if there's one that, hey, you guys are idiots. This one's obviously pretty good. But, you know, we mentioned the honorable mentions. But no, you talk about the, I mean, these are really just some really spectacular games. And I do, we mentioned a few times that if there's video for these, definitely watch them. I mean, nothing will get you more pumped up for watching, you know, today's playoff games or today's basketball than watching these classic games and just seeing these unbelievable crowds and just unbelievable stars of years past. I mean, that's what's so awesome about doing this that we do on this podcast, that I can go back and watch these. And it kind of rekindles my love of basketball every time I go and watch these. So it's great.
Absolutely. So thanks, everyone, for checking us out. You can find us at thepodiumgame.com. We are part of the Hardwood Paroxysm Basketball Network of Podcasts, which you can find on iTunes if you search for Hardwood Paroxysm. And we would love a rating and review, not just for Over and Back, but for all the other great podcasts on the Podium Game Network, at thepodiumgame.com. And you can also check us out on Twitter at Over and Back NBA, also on Facebook at the same address. That's about it, Rich.
Yeah, that's all I got. So, it's definitely a good show, and I'm looking forward to our top seven NBA finals, too.
Yeah.
It's going to be a very interesting one.
Yeah, so anyone who wants to express an opinion about top seven NBA finals before, you know, we've made our choices right now, but, you know, we could always be convinced by a compelling argument. If you want to send us, right, you know, your favorite or a memory or something interesting about that, we would, you know, be interested in you know, learning about it and maybe even sharing something on the show. So
yeah, absolutely. You know the flow of these shows now, so you know kind of what we're looking for here. So yeah, if you find one that fits our criteria that you think, hey, you guys have to cover this, there's a good chance we probably have, but maybe we haven't. So definitely let us know.
All right, cool. All right, Rich. Well, take care, everyone. Until next time.